since the strike, we've had only one sort of official Poetry Center event, which was the open student reading we had on Wednesday. And this is the second. And we are particularly honored to have three of America's most influential poets here together at one time in a single reading: Robert Kelly and Paul Blackburn and Clayton Eshelman, all three of whom have been associated in one way or another, in various ways, both as writers and editors, translators, with the movement which, in American poetry, which seeks to discover new forms which can adequately communicate the quality of contemporary experience in incredible language. Clayton Eshelman has given up teaching, he tells me, to work full-time editing the magazine Caterpillar. Paul Blackburn is the author of four volumes of poetry, and Robert Kelly, who has been an editor of Chelsea Review and Trobar, and one of the two editors of the recent anthology, A Controversy of Poets, teaches at Bard. I want to say, before they begin, I want to keep reminding us that S.I. Hayakawa is still president, and that he came to prominence by writing a book which said, in effect, that the word is not the thing. It seems to me that people who are willing to use language irresponsibly always want to believe that the word is not the thing. But we know better. That's why we're here today. The first poet to read them will be Clayton Eshelman, and then Bob Kelly, and then Paul Blackburn. Okay.
Could I get a, is there an ashtray convenient? I can put this out if there is.
Let's dig up and dig some.
I'm going to begin reading a piece that was written in 1964 that is part of a long poem, a kind of an epic. It's been continuing since about 1962, called the Tsurugi no Miya Regeneration. It's modeled on Blake's longest first prophetic book, The Four Zoas. And my poem is made up of various books. This is the first movement of a book called The Book of Nyemonjima. Yoru no Maro knew too well this corrosion. Night after night, the fires of Nyemonjima had gone untended, and now broke out in savage blaze across the island crest. The alders smoked forth into the night. Who lay in the secret darkness turned and twisted with hopelessness for marriage, for the fire had been baited. Twigs and strands of hugs tossed to the hungry little flames, a log here, a stone there. Forever, forever. And a moan went forth from the firewall. A throw of the dice will never abolish chance. To be redeemed, you must go to eternal death. Whoever stood on the banks of the Pacific felt the moon. Nyemonjima appeared a half mile out, black against the midnight starless. Flames choked in mind, the altar unknown, no longer to convert into the fraternity changes. No longer is there a brotherhood of men, the savagery in the lot, the picnic, the raped pine. And whoever stood on the murmuring shore stood likewise along the entangled darkness of the Sapik. Shields bob through the trees, the masks are prepared that lead to Nyemonjima's altars. For I am in the state of New Ireland, as slabs of wood are bent blue, white, red, birds and snakes across the pale inner shell, so does my imagination shake and tear against the roots and vines of Coatlicue's web of desire and longing. The beloved unknown, desired, but desired as shadow dancing across Nyemonjima's altar walls. I stand rooted to these shores and watch the men of the Sapik, were they as mild as New Ireland, move along the high dorsal ridge a half mile offshore, Neamonjima, her hair crawled through by men with spears and bull roarers, her trees silent to the vast Pacific. Neamonjima, beloved of your nomado, why do I desire you and not she to whom I am wed? And this is the problem of the naming. All things relate. Whoever stands on the shore is without name. This is the madness of which I write. Your nomado is the body through whose acts I make the images of Neamonjima, my soul, outwardly the work. But these things do not exist unless eternal, and this is the problem of the naming, for within me unnamed is no mobility. I was on that shore. I saw Neamonjima and felt the consolations of Barbara. But who tells you now? Yea, through whom does this hand write? For your nomado felt his brain move off as if divided by waters, as a castle parts to sodden sand. O beloved your nomado, who I must sing of, whose adventures with Neamonjima are the life wherein I live, O beloved your nomado, who may not exist. This is the problem of the naming. This is my love song in these dreadful nights. And I bowed to the waters miles below my hands. Oh, that the poem fulfilled my obligations. Oh, that Barbara were not my wife. A wind moved in across the dark roar, begging understanding. The ways of women are most treacherous to men only if man commit that treachery first. For man creates woman, but creates and casts her away, and the wind wept, winding in her pale tulle before him. So am I doomed to wander for the emanations of men, all waters in search of their lost children till world end. And she wept for oil, for lantern, for the lanes of the sea are dark, called by Jones Dutchman. I name her Mother Water, Imago Mano of my pain. O terrible child, she cried, between you and your beloved has come a wife. Before you were not one, but now you are three. And smiled terribly. There is a Sapik river in every man, of blood and dirt compounded, runs along his back like a shrimp's. I am Coatlicue's sister, balancer of the dance. And I saw her webby skin, as grove to spider she howled and was gone. Oh, praise him through whom I hear the seventh book of Zoas. I am but a form and organ of life, and of myself am nothing, being created continually by mercy and love divine. I have come to faith, and it is this faith that moves confidence in these words, that they are of other men's experience well as mine. For as flames toss against the midnight starless from Neamonjima crest, so does she lie awake, a tongue of longing more become than a woman, until at last she is my mother, not Coatlicue, but Gladys Umbilical, claiming to be wife and beloved, terrifically close to the true state of marriage. As such, a mother growing young and married at a mask ball. The hour tolls, but the covering has grown so thin, are we not known all along? The hour tolls. The men of the Sapik hurry along Neamonjima's outer lines. And the spirit of Barbara followed me down to the shore in the form of Jerusalem along the Arlington. She stood behind my kneeling in worry and care, who I could not embrace, for forced the act of love is slain on the fields of divorce. In bed, a wife turned viperous with desire, the maw of Tokyo, a million red lights to swallow the wanderer, and on his return present him as a baby to the ladies. And she stood behind my kneeling, pointing with one hand back to the inn, and with the other out to Neamonjima, and to the water wheel turned inside me, a rack toward Neamonjima. I would not give myself to whoever roamed the waters. All my images fled for a mortal woman. To be redeemed. Slowly the air consolidated, and I prayed with my hands horizontal to the surf. Lord, help me understand my sex. Lord, let my wife be the one I love. For the men of the Sapik broke into loud chants, moving swiftly through her upper grasses, around the concentric dirt paths, towards where the altar buffeted and smoked a terrible pink steam of desire, praying against the waters. Lord, let me be satisfied with generation. Let me accept her without her robes. The poem is a tree stripped of winter. My ears are locked to my bowels. And it was only the robe that drove him on, a vision of the inland sea, which is called the gull robe, gorgeous, of white feathers, emblazoned with stars and moons, the lovely garment every loved woman wears, of midnight blue and silks, in which a light streams for all who ride away into the darkening, carrying the torches of unconscious love, the softness and precision of love desire. But now the clan wears the gull robe. The men of the Phi Delta Theta commingle with the ordered rhythms of the Sapik, and who is to say she wears a gown? The 84 Boer strives in darkness with the daughters of Jerusalem along the Annandale. He is far from Yor Nomado, now arguing by the Pacific with the hopeless wanderer who would sleep contracted in fetal anguish rather than go to eternal death of wife and generation, through whom only will Neomonjama ever flow a river in the arms of any man. Give me strength for my labor, for even now I doubt what I write in the very act of creation. I see the sperm spurt, the men of the Sapik Delta dance round her tortured altars, the blood gushes, the poor wife tilts back that her ovaries may drink, the trailer lurches, pets flee bumping into cupboards and baskets, the smell of garbage commingles with desire. She is absolutely naked in her own jipe soutine red flowing on the bed. The husband flees in terrors to the bars, but ah, the spirit of Barbara cannot hold him. Like rising backdrops, he runs open arm through her arms. The altar smokes, gems congeal. A fat carnival face grins between the pillars. All is shifting levels of darkness as memory crowds in. The only sureness is, quote, a bird on a wire, unquote. She is absolutely naked without God, and lo, she comes down to me. She stands weeping behind me on the shore, and I will not turn to embrace him or her for fear he or she are stone. Yor Nomado saw his brain hermaphrodize, sand in love with sand as she swept back wailing. All wanted in, the stop sign, the mole. He shut his mouth and threw himself in ice before her blazing pyres. The blood turns to gold, the mind to mind, a Victorian Christmas art book Jungian bride. Under the weight of this shale, Neomonjama could hardly move. And the sons of the Sapik Delta mocked her tiger-striped bangs, crying, behold, if you know so fucking much, fulfill our desires. And laughing, slung a bloody bull dick round her neck, crying, and clothed her in burlap sackcloth and ashes, taped raw liver in her armpits, a string with pull sign to her dick. And shaving her head, crying, behold, the golden princess of our homecoming, behold, our Snow White. And Yor Nomado's only sureness forced to watch was the work of the imagination is in the service of brotherhood. My desire to possess Neomonjama darkened by canal, bereft of night watch, in deepest fidelity to Barbara. This is a journal notation. It was written in January 1967. The Shelf. Talking with Robert Kelly, I had said in Reich I had found a base, that I now knew where I stood and could, less hindered than before, begin to work with greater energy, with a more peaceful energy. Kelly rejected base. He said, it is to never have a base, for poetry is always without base. I thought he misunderstood me, for I did not mean security or reason for. Though his objection troubled me, and it has not been until tonight, unable to sleep, and then sensing image with which to work my unexpired energy, that I found a larger grounds for our talk. Again I thought of Reich, and how in following out his theory, by engaging in therapy, the only way I knew how to read him, which in itself brings me back to this writing renewed, my body and my attitude toward it has begun to thaw, how in taking pleasure, as I must have as a very small child, in breathing and fondling myself, I have gained a bit more light in my eyes and have seen more in others. I have seen more of others at others. I have become more alive. As I lay in bed, the passage Lew Sukowski uses of Midsummer's Night's Dream to open his study on Shakespeare, in connection with Kelly, came suddenly to mind, quote, it shall be called Bottom's Dream, because it hath no bottom, unquote. What actually has been happening to me is that a base, or a shelf, as I would prefer to call it, has been dropping away. The universe is less and less without that particular restriction. It is more as one sees everywhere. I would say that such shelf was not only coming off of it, but a thing that constantly interjected itself between others and myself. Visible part of my own iceberg, my congealedness in the universe. Perhaps it did give warning, and in that sense saved both parties from more grief. I can best explain it by saying, at this point, that it is as if walking down Greenwich Avenue, suddenly a shelf would block view of that building, of a show window, say an item, such as a man's supporter in that window. Or in the back seat of a cab in Lima, Peru, next to a woman, a shelf would interpose, and I could no longer see her. I do not mean to say that the shelf was necessarily phallic, but rather as if I were on it, an old thing, undusted, looking from my helplessness at her, busy in her being. The shelf runs through one and seems to form a cross at a certain point. Two, it is something one carries as a surfboard or groceries in one's arms, too heavy to regard the street as one hurries forward. I don't mean to say that I have cast off the negative burden of existence. Rather, it might be more accurate to say that I have begun to experience my endurance. I may not feel the full impact of this shift for many years, and that is what I wanted to say tonight. The land has opened, cracked, as if to make me visible. 18 January 1967. This is a little essay called The Red Mantle. Man comes out of ritual, strength. We long to return to its clear delineation. But in ritual, in the repeated, is the origin of rules. Thus Japan, or what we know as formal, ritual, as opposed to our own Newfoundland. Man's intelligence making decision at all points. Mind as opposed to things of block, ritual. Ritual is blocks, man guided through Viking passageway of huge stones. Blocks run by, forming the maze. Thus, the strength of the past. Thus, the block of the past. Why get angry? You may be right. This is a little piece that ends with a couple of quotations at the end. I just might say that I found that what I call upon when I really need other people's words or need to hear a particular kind of formula or like watchword has often struck me as being rather mundane as opposed to being something that is very high charged or has a particular philosophical cast to it. And so the little two quotations that come at the end of this are things that seem to have reoccurred in my own life as a poet over the last 8 or 10 years that really are, that mean the most to me as recurring phrases like this. Watchtowers. Often see sea in loft floor, blue painted splintery, dust lamp searching, stopped, sweeping. What do you want? Older grows more intimate, colder. In each molecule, a violation. From some former life? No way to make this life more lawful. Be glad. Do the best you can. And what brought you here will take you hence. I'll read two more pieces. These are both very recent. Giant forms. Press, another dead cockroach. What's going on in Vietnam? Matthew sleeps above, in the bed I fuck in. surprised any escape. Kong or children live in the dark behind the lattice. Pulling his cap on rough a week ago, my peak. Giant forms, often the smallest in nature. He is three, four planets in Pisces. All children have eight planets in Pisces. Live in the dark, behind the lattice, as gentle moon or raging Taurus we move. Helicopter. A display of giant forms, Blake called his Grecian energies. In the greatest, the smallest. He is at ease with me, means everything. Radix sun. Helicopter sun of bent tears, swastika of crushed cock or roach. We either touch with tenderness who we love, or we are spectral, having only our life through the sense of another. Waiting. The sound of water, a sink. His hands in it, washing off, not the last patient. Lady Macbeth. He can't get the blood from his hands. No man can, until all men are in. Kind doctor, so his hands will be clean. The next body, catatonic or neurotic. The water trickles, he turns it off. Water of eternal life. I am sitting in the office waiting, a well man. Dark waiting room, shrouded orgone accumulator in corner, for a year and a half moved by this wood box. Simple, primitive, like shack in woods. Unused box, scared box. Door slightly open, hangs in sunshaft off 10th, falling through it water of life. A painting, many on the walls, one of what Reich called cosmic superimposition. Done, it looks, by patient, crude, two star streams curving into each. Another of what seems to be a bulb giving off incredible light. Plant bulb, my mother'd plant, I at her hip. 8 years old, Indianapolis. A strange 20s cast, presence, the presence in waiting room of something died, like another attempt, one might say, to save man. Within this arena of the failed, Dr. Handelman washing his hands, healing, continuing, small animal moving in the darker burrows of mankind. Easter Sunday, all our archetypes, a girl laughing of regeneration, somehow held in place, fixed, a limit determined. The ode, the regeneration, at the same time, elegy. The naked bodies under the doctor's hands, passed over, touched, breathing, some feeling for the first time in living memory. God's hands across the waters. Albion, as Blake called his country, scattered as nations. The feeling in human bodies scattered, which anger, raving, helps restore. So we can read the news? I am well, remember, I said, of the two-year-old child hung up by its wrists and whipped. The father would not let the mother in the bathroom after he'd finished to nurse the child's wounds. One writes, all joy based on some exclusion, somewhere, always. A two-year-old is being whipped. We feel joy only by ceasing to think on this. Think on this. Think on this. Is there any way to think through this? Madness or apocalypse? Blake risked madness. In the movies, the spring breaks from where the girl was raped. Outside of art, the girl is simply raped. We hear the spring in Handelman's hands. All history moves to this confrontation. Sunlight on white wall. Easter Day, 1969, millions moving through parks, the life in the trees, Doris Heller calling from the bottom of her soulless feet, "Are you interested in me?" Life seems at times cathedral, all history gathered, praying over the skulls of saints, canonized by effectively denying life as they let life through, little halos with their unwatered lust raging around, Saint Anthony or Jesus, all life, force transferred to head. And we pray, as it were, in the shadows of their desires, look back to skull racks, finding first impulses of art. Thank you.